two caveats that I want to bring into this time. One is, a lot of times in church, we think that our stories are worth sharing when they're like way distant in the past, and we've learned all the lessons we can learn from them. And if there's an addiction, if there's a struggle, we fully overcome it, and we have years of sobriety, or we have years of recovery under our belts, and now that's a good, safe, packageable story to share. And here, we just reject that. That's not true. Because here's one of the side effects of that way that kind of seeps into church or seeps into life, is that you are struggling with something today. All of you, I mean, if you're a human being, like if you have a heartbeat, you're struggling with something today. A thought, an addiction, something. And you don't have to hide that deep down until you can make it packageable and ready to share this great thing that you've overcome. No, don't do that. That leads to death and sickness. It gives all the power and control to our struggles. And so we're talking about stories that some have happened in the past, but they're still alive. They're still happening. So we're not just going to look at these stories and say, oh, these are the people that are all better. No, like they're not all better, because they're people. They're struggling like you. Here's the other thing. People are incredibly complex. Your thoughts, your life is incredibly complex. The people that we're bringing up here are going to share a part of their story, but I'm asking you to not reduce them to just the story they're going to share, but rather use the story they're going to share to get to know the rest of them, to ask them questions, to make connections, to talk with them. Sound good? Can we agree to those rules? Okay. Nice. Someone felt just enough. Okay. I think applause is the funniest thing ever, where it really is like, are we going to do? No? Okay. All right. I'm not going to be the solo clapper. We all judge that guy or gal. Tom McCoy, would you come on up? And would you guys welcome Mr. McCoy? All right.
So I really wanted to leap up over the thing there, but after filling in ditches all weekend, I thought the stairs might be a better option.
We all support that, yeah. A collapse would be a real bummer of a way to kick this off, wouldn't
Indeed.
It? Yeah. So Tom and I, we've known each other for 6-7 years.
At least.
Yeah, at least that. And you guys are in for a treat. Tom is awesome. And I have learned and gained so much from Tom and his story and his life. There's people that you meet every once in a while where when you talk to them a little bit, here's just the only words I use to describe it. This is a deep well. Like, this well goes real deep. And there are truths and things that are brought up that isn't like they had an inspirational calendar they read off of that day. Like, this is life worn, deep, reflective, in prayer, in God, like that's where this thing came from. And I appreciate Tom as one of those folks. So I appreciate you being able to come up and share. And what we're going to be talking about today is Tom's kind of journey when it comes to work, when it comes to what do? When you go to a party and people don't know what to talk about outside of the weather and they say, so what do? Right? And your answer to that. So Tom, why don't you share some of your story about what you have done throughout life?
Well, I think really to start out my story, you have to understand a little something about me. I don't know if any of you have ever had to go to court and what that feels like. I'll try to describe it a little bit. Maybe you... even just a traffic ticket or whatever it might be, but you wake up that morning, probably about 3 o'clock in the morning, and your mind starts to spin and you start to think about all of the ways that you can make your point, that you can get your point across, that you can defend yourself. And there's that butterflies in the stomach and that tenseness, that nervousness, that almost feeling of panic that comes over you. And it's just like an anticipation. And in my life, I think that almost every day I have woken up with the feeling that I'm on trial and that I need to go out and somehow defend myself, somehow prove myself to prove that, and the verdict that I'm looking for, I'll be perfectly honest, I'm looking for a verdict of valuable and important. And some of that has to do with things that are a huge part of my story growing up and whatnot, things that either happened to me or choices I made that, that made me feel very unvaluable and unimportant. So that, this constant nagging sense that I'm on trial has colored everything I've done occupationally all of my life. So I, when I got out of high school, I tried a couple of things. I tried working at the paper mill and working at the foundry, you know, the good paying hard work jobs. I tried to go to college. None of that stuff really seemed to work well. And about the only choice that was left to me was to go in the service, to join the Navy, which I did, and learned to trade, learned some electronics and how to repair technical things on aircrafts. When I came out of the Navy, I went right to work in a very technical field, and within just a short period of time found myself doing field service work, and started out with medical equipment and then went to copying and printing equipment, printing presses, all kinds of interesting things like that. And it wasn't too long before I supervised a whole great big bunch of guys that were doing that kind of work. And from that point went to being a regional trainer. And when I kind of hit the top of that some years ago, there were probably only maybe a half a dozen guys in the Northwest that could do the kind of work that I knew how to do. So it was one of those things that I set myself out to just really prove that I could be valuable and important in the work that I did. From that point, you know, you get to the top of things and you can kind of get bored with what you're doing. And I had been involved in the church for a number of years and involved in ministry. And the church that I went to had a program, and it was kind of a leftover program from a bygone era, but they recognized people that were doing the work of a pastor and said, hey, we need to provide a way for them to have some more formal training and opportunity. And so I got in on the kind of the very tail end of that program and went through a very long internship, a whole bunch of mentored study. Part of that was the time that Kurt and I really got acquainted, and Kurt served as a mentor to me for a number of years, as well as some other folks. And I went through that season of my life, and somewhere along the way, I began to realize that there was something about me, I think, that was not quite where it needed to be. And I began to ask the Lord to break that down, to break it up, and to teach me how to be humble and gentle. And that's a very scary thing to do.
Yeah, don't do that prayer unless you're serious, just so you know. Like, God, make me humble is probably the most dangerous prayer ever. Just count your costs on that one.
Absolutely. So almost immediately, the role that I had at the church began to break up. And I found myself, I had actually been working part-time in my previous field and able to make really good money because of my knowledge and skills, working just slightly more than half-time. That situation completely crumbled and fell apart, and I found myself all of a sudden in need of earning a living. And so I took a job doing maintenance in a retirement community. I thought, what a wonderful way to be able to serve a part of our population that really needs help and to learn some new things and whatnot, and found myself in a situation where I no longer could be that superstar, that valuable, important guy. I was in a position where people are treated entirely differently. You know, there's a real separation in our culture between folks who are educated and have a skill and people who basically hold this world together, the people that get down and do the work. And I found myself in that place where I was replaceable. I was another body to fill a position, and working with a whole crew of people who are just basically there, their labor, their bodies to fill a position and considered to be replaceable by management. And so for the last few years, I've been in that kind of a situation, and it doesn't matter how hard I try to prove that I'm valuable and important. I'm simply not. I'm simply a cog in the wheel. And what a lesson to learn.
So talk a little bit more about that lesson. Talk a little bit more about what were the tracks playing in your head? What were the things that you believed when you were at the top? And how have those changed? Have those changed in the role that you have now?
Well, when I was at the top, I had discovered some tools that I used to stay at the top and probably to get to the top. And I warn you, these things are not very pretty. I discovered some techniques like if somebody didn't want to do things the way that I thought it needed to be done, just a quick outburst of anger could set that person right back on track. And so you can see that I developed some habits to defend my identity as the expert that were not godly, and they were not good to look at. And to bring those tactics into an entirely different situation where I didn't have, you know, but before, I could blow my stack and say, what are you going to do? Fire me? There's nobody else that knows how to do what I do. And to try to take that kind of a personality, that kind of a tactic into a situation where I'm eminently replaceable, it did not go well for me. And so I found myself, when I would use those tactics, getting completely squashed. And I found myself really questioning my identity, my value as a human being, and realizing that some of the ways that I had been acting were just flat wrong, and that I needed to learn new ways to interact with people. And having to do that at the same time as having who I was as a worker stripped away. And I just don't think we realize how much importance we place on what we do to our identity. And so
Yeah. I should have jumped in there sooner. So with that, here's what I'm interested in is, so how has your understanding of God shifted during that time? So when you feel like, all right, I can use outburst of anger, I can have this, I can control the situation, what are you going to do? Fire me? Which is hopefully a rhetorical question. But now that you're in a position where it's no longer a rhetorical question, it's probably one you shouldn't ask, how has your view of God changed and morphed throughout that?
Well, I recognize how much most of my life I have trusted in my own efforts to get what I needed. And, you know, right from the very beginning, to get what I needed is a wrong premise, because I'm very much not qualified to understand what it is that I need. And so when I look at life through how do I get my needs met, it's just a real fear-based, you know, I'm afraid I'm not going to get what I need. I'm afraid I'm not going to get what I need. I'm afraid I'm not going to get what I need. And when I'm afraid, I do get angry and defensive. And fear starts to inform everything that I do. So there's a different way to look at life. And we sang it in a song this morning. The words said, give me faith to trust what I say. That's God's words to me. He wants to give me faith to trust what he has to say to me. And so these last few years have been a slow developing of listening to what God has to say and understanding what he wants me to have, and then trusting him to provide that and not feeling like I need to be in control, like I have to control the situation and use my anger to manipulate and those kinds of things, but just to rest in his promises and trust what he has to say to me.
So in that, because that's a profound, like if you're taking notes, you should have written that down. That's like that first thing that you were saying about I needed to defend because I was finding what I need. And I was defending it. I was holding on to it. Because it's a fear-based mentality that most of us operate in. We're not thinking of it. It's this thing that's existing underneath, but we're trying to protect what's ours. So let's talk really, really practically. What difference does it make when you surrender that? So in your work and the thing that you do, when you decide not to respond in that, what's one way that you would have responded before, and how is it different now? Is it different now?
Well, there are so many situations in the work that I do now. The company that I work for is very, it's a cookie cutter operation, and they have learned that if they will do everything in each building the same way across the board, that it's far easier for them to manage.
And that's not a literal cookie cutter operation. You're not literally making cookie cutters. This is a...
Sometimes I feel like my cookie's been cut. So there's very, very little room for any practical input from the employee's standpoint as to how the business is run. That has been a very difficult, you know, any other job that I've ever had, the reason I had the job was because I had knowledge or skills that somebody else needed to add to their operation. And now I'm in a situation where they do not want me to add anything. All they want me to do is to follow the program and do the steps as we go. And that's been very difficult to me, and I have fought against that on more than one occasion, and to no avail. So as I look at that, there's so many things that I think, I could fix that, I could make that better. But to be able to just relax and to let go of that, to put it in God's hands, excuse me, and to just trust him that he knows what's going on. He sees what the situation is and is more than willing to intervene on a way that helps everybody.
So talk a little bit about identity. So that's some of the living out of it, is that I have this fear of all that. How has your view of self changed over the years?
I have... struggled for so many years to try to paint a picture of myself. And, you know, you can look back. I think I've been on Facebook for about six years now. You can look back at my wall, and you can look at kind of piece by piece how I've tried to project an image of myself. And so you'll see some of the cool things that I've done, the motorcycle rides and the lumber making and the forestry work and you know, just all of these kinds of things that I've tried to paint this picture so that anybody that looks at my wall can say, oh, okay, that's Tom. And I've done that in so many areas of my life. I've tried to build this profile so that people could see who I really am. And it's somewhat warped. It's my looking at myself and trying to decide who the best Tom is, and then trying to somehow project that and get over or around the rough spots that don't quite line up with the truth that I'm trying to project. And so there's been a lifetime of building an identity, which I wouldn't really say is a false identity, because all of those things are pieces of me. They're pieces of who I am and where I've been and what I've done, but they're so totally incomplete. And what I know to be true now is that the only way to come to a completeness in the understanding of who I am is from the Word of God, and to let Him bit by bit give me the faith to really believe who He says I am.
So talk a little bit about that process. What does that look like? Because, so if you're here this morning, how many of you have struggled with, I love that image of Facebook, and you should all friend request Tom McCoy, go on Facebook. Now I'm really interested to see the wall now. I'll start commenting on ones from 6 years ago. Not this guy, not the Tom I know. but how many of you have lived in that place, or you're in, like, I want people to know this part of me. Like, this is the thing, because it's not false. That's the thing. Is like, if we thought it was false, then we would probably recognize. But usually it's the part that's true, but we want people to like know a little bit more of that truth and a little bit less of this truth. That's not a process that you walk out of tomorrow. Like, acknowledging that today probably isn't going to change that thing where you want to. So talk a little bit, what is that process like? How do you do that? And I'm asking really, like, what are some of the disciplines that you've learned or some that you've tried that didn't work to kind of deprogram from that?
Well, I have to say that for probably the last 30 years, I really have immersed myself in the Bible, in prayer, and it's amazing to me that after all of those years and so much experience and so much absorbing of knowledge, that I could find myself still be this far from the mark. And that tells me right there that there's a problem with my worldview and my view of who God says I am. So I'm filled with all this knowledge, and the attempt to try to apply that knowledge, and finding that knowledge is not necessarily the answer to life change. And so there's a point where, yes, I need to know what God's Word has to say about who He is and about who I am. And if I don't know that, I can get pretty strange. But there's a time where knowledge just isn't going to carry me any further. And so then it becomes about relationship with God, and about relationship with people who will be honest with me and who love me enough to tell me the truth when they see it. There's a breaking down process, and I can't say that I've willingly submitted to that, although there is an intellectual part here somewhere that has asked for this and has said, yes, I need to be broken down. I need to experience some things not working the way they used to so that I can experience new ways. And so the whole process with the occupation, the career, and the direction that's taken has been very necessary. It's been very necessary for me to get myself in positions where what used to work for me can't work anymore. Because as long as the old crap is working, you're going to continue to do it, no matter how much you think you want to change. Place that's been very, very recent in my story is that just a couple of months ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. And I had some pretty strange reactions to that. You know, one of the first things out of my mouth is, wow, I never thought that would happen to me. And then the thing that floods in after that is my own capability. You know, this is how I've been. This idea that, well, gosh, I'm really fit. You know, I work hard, I exercise regularly, I eat well, I'm just really a healthy specimen of a human being. I'm sure that's going to carry me through this. And then the awakening, the realization that no, this is a deadly disease, and it falls on the just and the unjust. It really does. When it rains, it rains. And there's nothing I can bring to the table that can see me through this. Absolutely nothing. And the only thing that can see me through this season in my life is the love of God and His grace. And I don't know what the outcome is going to be of this, but I know that for once in my life, I am so totally and inconceivably helpless that I think I can finally start to understand what it really means to trust God and to allow His grace to define who I am.
So let me see if I'm hearing something. One of the first things that I heard you say is to solve a problem, you have to admit that there is one. Mm-hmm. Right? So and a lot of times we don't stop behavior that's quote unquote working for us. So the first question maybe for all of us is, and I love this question, it's one of my favorite, how's that working for you? Whatever the behavior, whatever the thought process, whatever the thing is how's that working for you? And why is it working? Is it working? Or more often than not, I don't know that false projection of yourself, I don't think that very carefully curated Facebook wall world is working for us. And one of the things that Tom hit on in there is because it rejects something. It actually needs to by its very, it has to reject honest, authentic relationship. Right? If you have a self that you're curating that you want others to know, if you're using outbursts of anger, which is really nothing more than creating space, pushing people away to create space, you're doing that because you don't want people to know that projection of yourself isn't true. And the best way to keep them out is, you know, you keep Scooby-Doo and his crew at bay. You don't let them in there investigating. But if you're willing to step into authentic relationship and really lay yourself bare, which is some of what Tom's doing right now with us, now this is the first step on a road to healing. So here's the next thing. Did you feel like that was that helpful? Was that like a good first step? Okay. Whew. I'm glad you didn't say no. I felt really vulnerable there. So the next step, I was really interested. I want you to talk more about it's not just knowledge. So there seems to be something about the way in which you engage in Scripture that is significant. If you're really trying to, if you're not going to the Bible to build up your knowledge or to prove your theological worth, then what are some different ways you've engaged in prayer, in Scripture, with God? Like, how does that change?
I have an understanding that God's deepest desire is to have relationship with us. And so to approach any of the spiritual disciplines not as a way to learn or to grow or to be a better person, but just to approach those disciplines for relationship seems to make a huge difference. And I have read the Bible through in a annual Bible reading plan for a couple of decades. I've done all kinds of disciplined prayer and things like that. And I have found that of recent, maybe the last few years, I have become so much more relaxed with how I approach these disciplines. I get up in the morning and make a pot of coffee, and I sit down with the Word and maybe just read one chapter. I might read Mark chapter 10 and just look at it as God speaking to me. You know, I'm not looking for facts. I'm not looking to try to find out what happened. I'm not looking to be able to take a verse from that to be able to use sometime during the day to quote to somebody to help them. But gosh, I spent a lot of time in the Word trying to do that. Well, how can I use this to help somebody rather than just how can I relate to my loving Father with that. So it's a kind of a relaxed sitting in front of the fire with a cup of coffee. God, what do you have to say to me? What would you like to share with me today? And you know, I keep a journal page or a journal book handy, and not every morning, but some mornings I'll see something that speaks right into where I'm at right there. And so I'll make some notes so that I can come back to it if I want. So it's really being more and more of an approach of just relationship. How can I know God? How can I be friends with God?
And as you know God, as you learn God, what have you learned about your own identity? You open this up, you started this with the courtroom scene. And like you're showing up every day to plead your case and hope that you're found valuable, that you're found worthy. As you just tried to relate to God, how has that impacted view of self based on what you do?
Well, you know what? I finally made the observation that courtroom is empty. And when I show up there, there's just a kind of a layer of dust on everything. There's no judge, there's no lawyers, there's no jury. There's nobody there. And you know why? Because the trial's already over. And it was, that seems to be getting tighter and tighter there.
I think it's a hint from our sound guys over here.
Could be, yeah, they're trying to reel me in. No, the trial is already over. And what's happened is that Jesus stood trial on my behalf. And he took what I deserved so that I could have what I don't deserve. And included in that is an identity. And so to continue to wake up in the morning with that feeling that I'm on trial is just not, it just can't be there anymore. The trial's over. The victory's been won. Christ at the cross declared that I was valuable and important. And so my journey from this point forward is not to try to prove that I'm valuable and important, but to rest in the truth that God has said, you are worth a son to me, that you are valuable and important.
So if you guys walk out with nothing else, I love that imagery. I love that imagery, and Tom shared that with me before. Because I feel like so many days, and maybe you can relate, I am pleading a case. And to zoom out of that and be like the insanity of pleading that case to an empty courtroom. Like there's no one there. No one cares. Because the verdict's already been read. You are valuable. You are good. You are loved. And whether you succeed wildly tomorrow or you fall flat on your face, like, no one's in that courtroom. No one's seeking to try you based on your merits. Instead, Christ has come to say, you have value. You are worthy. And so it changes everything. Whether you're coming in at the top of a corporation or the bottom, or you feel great in what you do tomorrow, or you feel completely overwhelmed by it, that you are good. You are loved. You are okay. So here's the freedom. Go have fun in this world. Go enjoy yourself. Go risk. Go try. Go see where God could be calling and what God could be doing, because the courtroom is empty. It's empty. And God wants us to bring us in relationship so that we can know him and we can engage with him and we can have this vibrant relationship. Not that we can prove that we belong in the relationship. It's awesome. It's freedom. And that's the biggest thing. Christ came what? So you may be free. May we all go and live into that kind of freedom. And Tom, I thank you for your story that helped us get there. And I'm going to invite the band up. They're gonna lead us in a song. Here, Tom, I'll take that. I won't put it over here. But I so appreciate, Tom, you being willing to come and share, because every conversation, every story is a holy moment. every conversation that you will hear, whether it's on stage with a microphone or not, is a holy moment. And may we engage with one another, learn from one another as we journey towards Christ. Would you pray with me?